This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you're a fan of HBO programming, you may have heard the work of composer Max Richter. He's responsible for scoring one of its dark dramas, The Leftovers. But recently, Richter released something a little more subdued, an 8-hour album called Sleep, which he calls a lullaby for a frenetic world. Here's a bit from one of Sleep's 31 tracks. This is called Path 5. Ambitious as an 8-hour album may be, Max Richter is hardly the first composer to send people nodding off, or to deliberately try to, and score a dreamscape. Philip Sherburn is a contributing editor at Pitchfork magazine, where we found his article, Key of Z, The History of Sleep Music. And Philip, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia.
I have to admit, that just sounds so beautiful to me. But before we jump into its history, any sense of how popular this whole genre of sleep music is today?
Well, you know, it's funny because since I've written the article, I've really had people coming out of the woodwork, both friends of mine and just readers, to say how important to them sleep music, or the choosing the right music for sleep, actually was. So I think it is, it's very close to a lot of people's hearts. When I was researching the story, one of the things that surprised me was how many people are using streaming services as a kind of lullaby machine. Especially on Spotify, they have more than a dozen sleep-themed playlists and something like 3 million user-created playlists that are all devoted to sleep.
Wow. So would you call sleep music a genre in itself, or is it just pulling? It's like a collection of other new age psychedelica that gets used for this specific purpose.
Right. I think it's whatever gets you through the night, really. For a lot of people, it's going to be ambient music. I always used to listen to like Aphex Twin and things like that to go to sleep. In the Spotify study, the number one song on people's sleep music playlist was actually Ed Sheeran, who I think is sort of a soft pop artist.
Loving can hurt. Loving can hurt sometimes.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, just the other day, I read an interview with Rusty, who's a Scottish electronic music composer, and he says that he falls asleep to really fast, loud rave music. So it really comes down to personal preference.
I can imagine, you know, listening to something as you're lulling yourself to sleep, but your article writes about the sleep concert. So first of all, what is that? And when did the sleep concert get its start?
Well, this is a really interesting phenomenon. And as far as I could tell, they have their roots in the all-night concerts of the 1960s that minimalist composers like Terry Riley and Lamonte Young and Marion Zazila were performing. They were concerts that had a lot to do with long duration and ritual and sort of an interest in non-Western cultures. The sleep concert as a format really seems to have come into its own in the 1970s. With specifically one composer named Rip Heyman. He is an interesting figure. He's out of New York. He had sort of Fluxus connections. He did these absurdist pieces. One was called Bell Roll, in which he donned a coat strung up with bells and he would roll down a hill. So he became interested in sleep because he had a very vivid dream life, he said. And he began organizing these all-night concerts with lavender and chamomile tea, and people were encouraged to fall asleep together and record their dreams. It was kind of almost a new age sort of thing.
It sounds like probably a little bit drug enhanced too.
My sense was that it actually wasn't drug enhanced. I know when I spoke to Robert Rich, who then sort of popularized the sleep concerts in the 80s, he was really adamantly sort of anti psychedelics. He was interested in kind of listening as its own sort of psychedelic. He was very much interested in presence.
Well, let's hear just a bit from Terry Riley, one of those you mentioned, you know, part of this whole kind of happenings, be-ins, the Fluxus movement of the 1960s. This is a bit from an 18-minute track called A Rainbow in Curved Air. Terry Riley, the minimalist composer's A Rainbow in Curved Air. A little bit more frenetic, obviously, maybe more like REM sleep. But what do you think is at the heart of this connection between music and sleep, or maybe even dreams?
Part of it is a communal thing. A lot of the people that I spoke to really emphasized that these sleep concerts specifically were about people coming together and experiencing something collectively. I spoke with a curator in Portugal named Pedro Rocha, and he said something to the effect that sleep concerts weren't something you could experience. You couldn't film them with your phone. You know, you had to be there, and you had to kind of give yourselves over to them, which I think is something that a lot of people maybe are craving, that sort of connection. You know, we're all sort of frazzled, we're all sort of distracted, and I think the idea of really, you know, putting your phone away and rolling out your sleeping bag and giving yourself over to the event for the night is appealing for that reason.
So you think that's why there's a little bit of a resurgence in interest in this now?
I think so. I know a few years ago at the Unsound Festival in Krakow, they invited Robert Rich to bring back the sleep concerts, which he'd stopped doing decades before. He's done them now again at the Red Bull Music Academy in Japan and elsewhere.
And Max Richter is doing these concerts as well. Are people showing up?
I know that for the album release party for his new album, which is the 8-hour composition, they did that as an all-night concert. And I believe that was a sellout event, full up. I don't know if he's continuing to do them, but I know the event at Unsound Festival in Krakow was also a sellout. I didn't go because at the time I was sort of nervous about the idea. Now I wish that I had.
Well, let's hear a bit from another recent sleep-themed album. This is from Jeff Bridges, the actor and sometime musician. His album is called Sleeping Tapes. This is a bit from Hum. Jeff Bridges from the album Sleeping Tapes. And I'm wondering, Philip, you review these, you know, how do you think our evaluation of music changes when there is a specific purpose behind it? I mean, how do you review a sleep album if you're supposed to listen to it while passed out?
Well, I guess, you know, you can look on a sort of a functional level. Does it get you there? Does it get you past the gates? And the Jeff Bridges album, I don't think it actually works as a sleep album because he's so personable. It's kind of hard to resist his appeal. I would have trouble actually falling asleep to that. I want to hear the jokes. I think the Max Richter is much more sort of suited to that sort of deep relaxation, you know, these very slow movements that they put you right out.
Well, Philip, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Philip Sherburn, he's contributing editor to Pitchfork magazine. There's a link to his article on the history of sleep with plenty of musical examples. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd like to know if you are the type to go to bed with music in the background. What is your go-to sleep soundtrack? Share your picks and post them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio.
My name is Megan Tan. I am a producer at Word of Mouth, and my go-to sleep song is Iron and Wine, Trapeze Swinger.
Please remember me.
Because it's beautiful, it's long, it's 10 minutes, somebody's like singing you a lullaby. It's also like the good sad song. Like the sad song you want to hear when you kind of want to feel sad and you also want to go to sleep.
We counted every black car passing your house.
Hi, I'm Morgan McMurray. I'm the executive producer of Word of Mouth, and my go-to sleep album is Gaucho by Steely Dan. Because it's Steely Dan, it's like you can just get lulled by Fagan's voice, and their lyrics are, you know, seemingly upbeat, but there's a darkness there, so you could have some nightmares. And just the production value is super sleepy, yacht rockish, and I mean that in a very good way.
Hi, I'm Taylor Quimby. I'm a producer with Word of Mouth. And my go-to sleep album is by Sunkill Moon. It's called Tiny Cities. And it's a whole album of Modest Mouse covers, but it's like very acoustic, heavy reverb on the vocals, kind of sad, but mostly beautiful. Gonna punch you in your glasses, oh no. Just got a message, said yeah, hell is freezing. There's like a couple tracks where the drums get a little too loud and kind of wake you up, but for the most part, it's perfect for sleep.
I'm Molly Donahue, and I'm a producer with Word of Mouth. And my go-to sleep song isn't a song. I would say it's the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Jerry Smith with the BBC News. Argentina is ending the foreign exchange restrictions that have prompted up the...
You know, it's always on at late night. I don't think I've ever really been fully awake while listening to a BBC World Service report. Yeah, just reminds me of very early mornings.
Killed the goose that laid the golden egg by restricting the growth of the economy.
I'm Logan Shannon. I'm a producer with Word of Mouth, and my favorite sleep song is the soundtrack to Amelie, specifically the tracks from Jan Tiersen, the instrumental tracks. It's the album I always bring on a plane if I need to sort of relax and sleep, because it lulls me to sleep, but it also reminds me of the movie, and it's one of my favorite movies, and it always sort of relaxes me.